Welcome back to the Honors Element, everyone. I'm Ben Lear, and with me, as always, is the brilliant Morgan Vincent. We're diving right into the world of acids and bases today, and if you've ever wondered why vinegar stings more than milk, or why battery acid is, well, terrifying, this one's for you.
Yeah, it's such a classic chemistry topic, but honestly, it gets complicated out of the gate, because even the word acid means different things depending on which chemist you ask. Or really more dangerous, which textbook you grab off the shelf. There's not just a single definition, right, Ben?
Absolutely not. It's the great acid-base debate. So let's run through the three main definitions chemists use. First, there's the Arrhenius definition. Basically, acids increase hydronium ions. That's H3O+ when dissolved in water, and bases increase hydroxide ions, OH-.
I think the Arrhenius model is useful for all those classic high school demonstrations, like strong acids and bases in water, or neutralization reactions. But then, it's kind of narrow, right? It's really all about water, and not every acid-base reaction cares about water. Enter Brunstad-Lowry. This model defines acids as proton donors, and bases as proton acceptors. It opens things up so we can talk about acids and bases trading protons, otherwise known as positive hydrogen ions, in all sorts of settings, even outside of water.
Exactly. So now you have conjugate acid-base pairs. Every time an acid donates a proton, it turns into its conjugate base. And the base that accepts becomes a conjugate acid. That's handy for understanding not just vinegar in water, but also things like ammonia in liquid ammonia. By these definitions, you can track who gives the proton, who takes it, and how strong each partner is.
But then there's the Lewis definition, which takes things even further. Now, acids are electron pair acceptors, and bases are electron pair donors. Suddenly, things like boron trifluoride or BF3 reacting with ammonia are acid-base reactions, even though there's no proton shuffling at all. And it is so wild, because you go from, it must have hydrogen, to, actually, it just needs to accept or donate an electron pair. This definition is really important for metal ions, complex ions, and other chemistry most students only see in upper-level classes.
Yeah, and that abstraction of electron transfer is what sometimes throws folks off. But don't worry, most of the time, you're still thinking in Brunstad-Lowry terms.
Right, the definitions layer over each other. In summary, Arrhenius gets us started in water. Brunstad-Lowry covers more ground with proton transfer, and Lewis stretches our minds about what it means to be an acid or a base. All three super relevant depending on what you're studying.
Let's keep going and talk about what it means to be strong or weak as an acid or base. This is where it gets real. The big thing to remember is strong and weak have nothing to do with how corrosive or dangerous something is. They're about how that acid or base ionizes in water.
Yeah, exactly. Strong acids like hydrochloric acid, HCl, or strong bases like sodium hydroxide, NaOH, completely ionize in water. That means if you start with a mole of hydrochloric acid, you'll end up with a mole of H3O+ and a mole of chlorine minus. The reaction's basically one way. So use a single arrow, not a double arrow. The equilibrium, if you can even call it that, lies so far to the right, there isn't really a chance for the backward reaction to happen.
But for a weak acid, like acetic acid, the acid in vinegar, or for ammonia as a weak base, things are very different. These guys only partially ionize in water. There's this dynamic equilibrium, so the double arrows finally make their entrance. Not everything becomes ions. In fact, most stay as the original molecule. So it's not like a 50-50 split. Often it's way less than that. That's why even concentrated vinegar still isn't nearly as acidic as the same amount of hydrochloric acid.
Absolutely. The technical term is the extent of reaction, how far the acid or base goes before hitting equilibrium. To describe these equilibriums, we use constants that tell us about the acid and base strengths. Ka is the acid dissociation constant, and Kb is the base dissociation constant. Strong acids have a huge Ka, whereas strong bases have a huge Kb. As we move to weaker acids and bases, their Ka and Kb values get smaller, respectively.
The strength of an acid comes in really handy if you want to know the pH of a solution. The pH of a solution from a strong acid is easy to predict. Just take the negative log of the concentration of H plus ions. However, for a weak acid, you have to account for how much actually ionizes. We will get into the specifics of this in class. Actually, weak acids can still lower the pH a lot, but they behave very differently from strong acids on a chemical level.
Yeah, and sometimes it flips expectations. Weak acids and bases can act as buffers or as mild reactants, which is neat because it's about their equilibrium behavior. That's also why vinegar doesn't fry your tongue the way battery acid would, even though both are definitely acids.
And the tools for working all this out, the Ka, Kb, and understanding equilibrium, if you've listened to our previous episodes on dynamic equilibrium and Le Chatelier's principle, you'll see the overlap. This is all about how systems settle, which applies whether you're talking gases or acids in solution.
Nice callback, Ben. So to wrap up this bit, the big story is that the strength of an acid or base is controlled by how far the ionization or dissociation reaction goes towards completion. And that's all about equilibrium. Strong means nearly complete. Weak means not so much. And a non-acid or base would be one that doesn't dissociate at all.
Anyway, let's ground all this theory with some household examples. We keep rattling off names, but it's worth actually lining them up. Strong acids, like hydrochloric acid, is something you'd find it in some cleaning solutions. Nitric acid, HNO3, and sulfuric acid, H2SO4, those are industrial strength. And then for strong bases, sodium hydroxide, NaOH, shows up in drain cleaner, while potassium hydroxide, KOH, and calcium hydroxide, CaOH2, which sometimes sneaks into farming and food processes.
And don't forget, most acids and bases we eat or use every day aren't strong. Vinegar, that's acetic acid, weak. Fluoride toothpaste, that's got weak hydrofluoric acid in some forms. And don't get scared, the concentration is minuscule. And then a classic weak base, ammonia, you will smell in cleaning agents. Their key characteristic is that they only partially react with water.
Which brings us to the autoionization of water. This is one of those details that gets glossed over in intro classes, but it's actually super important. Water can act as both an acid and a base, so even pure water has a very tiny concentration of hydronium and hydroxide ions, about 1 in 10 million each at room temperature. That autoionization is the origin of the neutral pH of 7, and it also creates the lower limit for how dilute a real acid or base can get.
And the pH and pOH scales are helpful for relating acid and base strengths to things around us. Orange juice, for example, might surprise you and be nearly as acidic as some sodas, with pHs in the 2 to 3 range. Milk is barely acidic, blood's practically neutral, and then jump over to household ammonia, and you've got a basic solution with a pH above 11. Everyday chemistry, right there in your fridge or under your sink.
And there are big real-world consequences, too. The chemistry of acid rain is basically a giant acid-base story, where strong acids get formed in the atmosphere and then hit soils, lakes, and buildings. And the game is all about which bases or carbonates are around to neutralize them. That's the same underlying competition of acids and bases that we just talked about, only now on a national park-size scale.
And those choices, strong versus weak, equilibrium versus completion, they show up everywhere from the pH of your coffee to the way antacids work to calm heartburn. So don't think of acids and bases just as scary or mysterious. They're part of everyday life in every field from biology to environmental science and engineering.
Thanks for exploring acids and bases with us today. Next time, we'll tackle how this to redox reactions. Ben, as always, a pleasure breaking down the chemistry universe with you.
Likewise, Morgan, chunky juice and all. See you all next episode, and don't forget to bring your curiosity with you. Bye, everyone.
Take care, folks. See you next time on the Honors Element.